This is Cashflow Ninja, episode 262 with Jeremy Roll.
Welcome to the Cashflow Ninja, the podcast sharing how to create income streams and manage, multiply, and protect your wealth in the new economy. Here is your host inside the dojo, MC Laubscher.
Hello, Cashflow Ninjas. MC Laubscher here, and welcome to another episode of the Cashflow Ninja. I have a great show for you today, and in today's show, I'm joined by returning guest Jeremy Roll that will share how to become a passive cash flow investor. Jeremy has been an active real estate and business investor for over 15 years, who left the corporate world in 2007 to become a full-time passive cash flow investor. He is currently an investor in more than 70 opportunities across $500 million worth of real estate and business assets. As founder and president of Roll Investment Group, Jeremy manages a group of over 1,000 investors in the United States and Canada who seek passive managed investments in real estate and businesses. Jeremy also co-founded Four Investors by Investors, a nonprofit organization, in 2007 with the goal of networking with, learning from, and helping other investors. Four Investors by Investors is now the largest group of public real estate investor meetings in California with over 23,000 members. Please share your feedback and thoughts on today's interview. You can let me know your thoughts on Twitter by tweeting me at MC Laubscher or by email at info@cashflowninja.com. And please remember to join our mailing list by signing up at cashflowninja.com or texting cashflowninja to 44222. To ensure you never miss one of our episodes, you can download our free interactive smartphone apps on the Apple and Google Play app stores. The wealthiest investors on the planet know how to capture their wealth and leverage it to perpetually grow it. If you're interested in learning the premier strategies of the wealthiest individuals and families on the planet, you can access an educational webinar at cashflowninja.com/be the bank. Jeremy, welcome.
Thanks, MC. I appreciate you having me.
So can you share a little bit about your background and how did you end up becoming a full-time passive cash flow investor?
Sure. So let's see, where do I start? I was in the corporate world for a good number of years, over 10 years. I kind of have a traditional corporate background. I'm originally from Montreal, Canada, moved down to Philadelphia, did my MBA over at UPenn or Wharton, and then graduated and started working in some corporate roles. So I've worked, for example, General Motors headquarters, Disney headquarters, Toyota headquarters. And I was kind of a mid-level manager in all these organizations at the time. And long story short is that back in 2002, after the dot-com crash, which some of your viewers may remember, I was kind of sick of and tired of the stock market for two reasons. And one of them was the lack of predictability. So not knowing where our retirement account would be in a day, a year, 10 years, 20 years, that really bothered me just from a retirement planning perspective. And then probably what bothered me more, which is less obvious, is the volatility before. And the lack of predictability was what actually bothered me the most. So not knowing where you know everything would be in a certain amount of time, that really bothered me the most. So it was more the predictability than the volatility that bothered me. I think most people are probably bothered by the volatility at the time when you see the market go down a lot and then maybe go up again. So I was looking for a better way to invest that would be more predictable. And I'm a pretty low risk, kind of slow and steady guy, and that was going to match my personality better. So that's actually how I started down the cash flow path early back in 2002.
So how has cash flow changed your life and changed your family's future?
Yeah, so it is just, and I don't mean to sound like an infomercial. I have nothing to sell anybody on this discussion. But basically, it's completely changed my life. And you know, at this point, to be honest with you, I kind of take it for granted because I've gotten used to it. It's 10 years later that I got out of the corporate world. So two things that passive cash flow has really been able to do for me. One is it got me out of the corporate world. It took a while. It's not a get rich quick scheme. It doesn't happen overnight. But with a proper planning, it can definitely happen. I've seen many people be able to do this. So that's one huge benefit. And the other is then, of course, freedom, because essentially I get to choose what I want to do with my time given that I have the cash flow coming in that covers my living expenses. I personally choose to focus on more investing and doing better on the investment side because I have a passion for it. I love it. But the fact that I have the freedom to do what I want and to essentially make money the way that I want, to do what I want with my time during the day, that's really, really big deal that I've gotten used to because I plan my own day. But when I think back to the corporate world, and I think back to other people who are probably listening who have kind of the 9-to-5 job, huge, huge difference. So cash flow has completely changed my life. And I'm 100% convinced that actually it's going to really help my family's future compared to where I could have been, because I'm 100% convinced that it's given me the time to focus on kind of maximizing the long-term net worth of my family, which is really, really critical.
Now, you've achieved financial freedom, and congratulations for that, living the life, a life that you love every single day and spending your time as you wanted to. There seems to be a disconnect when you look at education, not just in the United States, but globally, of how people are not educated on how to create these passive income investments or become a passive cash flow investor. Why do you think there's such a disconnect?
Great question. I would say, you know, probably the number one reason, in my opinion, is because the way the laws allow the Fidelities and the Morgan Stanleys and all the rest of the brokers in the world, or in the US anyway, to be able to advertise stocks and bonds and everything else and sell stocks and bonds in the way that they're actually structured and their licensing and stuff. But when it comes to these passive cash flow investments, normally only the really high net worth people have access to them. And you know, the Fidelities of the world actually do sell, and many of them, not all of them, do actually sell these types of opportunities. But then when they sell them themselves as a broker, they take a ton of fees, and it often doesn't make sense. And they only have a very limited selection. So what's happened essentially is that the brokers have been designed to really sell stocks and bonds as their primaries and other, you know, other things, mutual funds, et cetera. And that's what they focus on. That's what they advertise. And anytime anybody ever brings one of these up to a financial advisor, for the most part, or one of their brokers, I'm not going to say they steer them away, but it's not something they sell. So it's not something they discuss. And so most of the population doesn't know this exists. And frankly, recently with the advent of crowdfunding laws, it's become a little bit more common knowledge that these exist in the US and starting slowly. But the truth is, the vast majority of these opportunities are still not allowed to be publicly marketed. I believe the laws weren't made like that to help Wall Street so that people wouldn't hear about them. So you have to really network to find them. Which makes it a lot more difficult and makes it a very small subset of people that are aware of them.
Absolutely. Wall Street does not like competition. So what is a passive cash flow opportunity? How is it structured? And what do investors invest in when they invest in a passive cash flow investment?
Yeah, I'm just going to use commercial real estate as an example. It's my primary focus for many reasons. A lot of people here are probably familiar with commercial real estate. You can kind of apply the exact same thing to residential real estate. You can apply the exact same thing to that. I'm just going to use commercial because it's what I'm most familiar with. And I do invest in residential and in many other things too. But essentially, imagine investing in a 100 unit apartment building somewhere in the US where you will get an offering memorandum, they call it, or a kind of a investment summary of what they call a sponsor or an operator, someone who's organizing the whole thing and will actually run it, is intending to buy. And then you'll evaluate that as an investor. It'll be a number of pages, typically quite long, and it's supposed to be very detailed. And then if you decide to invest, you'll send your money and paperwork to that operator. Typically, you're filling out what's called a subscription agreement, and you're normally investing in an LLC. There's different structures. I'm just going to give you the most common one to keep it simple. And then once you send your money in, that operator is pooling all the investors' money together and then is buying the property. So it's an indirect ownership of a property. You're not getting a specific portion ownership of the title. You're owning it through the LLC. And essentially, from there, you would get normally quarterly reports and quarterly cash flow distributions from the property. Now, there's all different ways to invest. So you can do a ground up development where there's no cash flow. You can do 100% occupied apartment building where there should be cash flow right away. And there's everything in between, right? So I'm on the low risk side. So I'm going to kind of go over, when you ask me questions, it'll probably be more focused on the cash flow, low risk side, because that's what I live off of and that's what I focus on. But essentially, you have an indirect ownership of a property that an investor gets. You're making a bet on a manager or an operator or a sponsor. These are all kind of synonymous. Who was managing the day-to-day, sometimes who has their own management team at the property, sometimes they hire a third-party management team at the property. and they're managing everything. Again, and a portion of the profits and a management fee in exchange for doing so, in exchange for finding the opportunity. And then so you get hopefully these quarterly cash flow payments every quarter. And then once the property sells, you get a lump sum back, hopefully with presumably some level of profit involved. Very high level, very quick. That's how this works.
And the payments for these investments are these monthly payments that you're getting when you invest in these passive cash flow opportunities?
Well, the operator is taking in monthly collections. Let's just use apartments because a lot of people will probably understand. You know, you could talk about mobile home parks. You could talk about self-storage facilities. You could talk about office buildings, industrial buildings, hotels, other asset classes. But for the sake of simplicity, in an apartment building. So the operator is collecting those monthly rents, presumably. But they're usually making distributions to investors on a quarterly basis. This is for multiple reasons, both simplicity in terms of them sending checks or distributions out. They typically send a quarterly report with that distribution so you know what's going on at the property level. But it's also so that in case there's any capital expenditures that weren't foreseen, et cetera, it gives them a little bit of breather and be able to kind of accumulate a couple months of income before they have to distribute and see what needs to be done before they actually know what excess capital there is or cash available to distribute.
What's kind of the benefit, Jeremy, of investing in these as opposed to other investments that we see out there?
Yeah. So the first thing I would note, you know, if you're watching this and you're not familiar with this type of investing, the first thing I would note, and if you do some research, you'll see that this is really how the wealthy invest. And the reason is because a lot of the laws, the tax laws and other laws, are made to benefit these types of investments, to incentivize them, and the wealthy are benefiting from these. So, for example, there is something called depreciation that it flows through to investors when you depreciate the building you bought. There's something, there's expenses you can actually get that flow through and offset some of your income. So this is not a hard rule, but often when I invest in an apartment building, for example, between the depreciation and the expense flow through, let's say if it's 80 to 100% occupied, so cash flowing wealth, I'll receive four quarterly distributions. And at the end of the year, I'll get a tax form called a K-1, which is from the LLC, which the operator has to send out to the investors. And that K-1 will show how much I got in actual money sent to me that year. And then it will show the actual taxable amount owing. The difference is actually the depreciation and expense flow through. Very often, I either have zero, no, or negative, literally a credit, taxes owed towards that year. Now, I want to be 100% clear about something. This is not that you're not paying taxes. Taxes are deferred. Sometimes you hear people talk about the not having to pay taxes. It's not really 100% accurate. Your depreciation and expense flow through will accumulate towards, like, in other words, the government will track it. And then at the end, you have to pay a tax on something called recapture. They literally recapture the tax that you were supposed to have paid all these years from the depreciation, because when you sell the building, they recapture that. The great thing is the recapture tax rate is actually at a favorable rate, the long-term capital gains rate. So even that is favorable. But the great thing is, in all these years that you're accumulating this cash flow, a lot of the taxes, or maybe all of them, are deferred, and then you can reinvest that capital and compound, which you may have discussed on some of your podcasts. The really power of compounding is huge. So that's one big benefit that people probably aren't familiar with in general. Then the other benefit that I always point to is the fact that I personally believe that I'm doing better in terms of overall returns versus the stock market. So if you say that the long run average of the stock market's 8%, just to pick a number, okay, I can tell you that typically the types of opportunities I invest in, which is the lower risk spectrum, in other words, the more highly occupied types of properties, are going to typically project about a 16 or 15 to 20% annualized return. Now, that doesn't mean I'm getting 15% cash flow each year. The annualized return includes what I'm getting in the profits on the sale. So from a time value of money perspective, you're looking at the cash flow, which typically will start at around 8, 9% and then go up from there, hitting double digits quite quickly in stuff that I find, which is harder to find these days, but it's still out there. And then you're going to have the additional return coming out from the back end. So if I'm averaging 15 to 20% a year on these types of investments, if they go well, versus a stock market at 8, again, you'd have to run the numbers on a spreadsheet to show somebody, but that is a huge difference 20, 30, 40, 50 years down the line for my family. And that's what I was alluding to at the beginning, where I believe because I'm focused on this, I'm actually just ending up in a much better long-term wealth solution, a situation for my family. So that's a really big benefit as well. Another benefit really quickly is that when you invest in these types of deals, you're leveraging someone else's credit. So most of these opportunities I invest in, plus or minus 5%, we'll have about 70% loan to value on the loan, which means that we're putting 30% down and getting a loan for 70% of the purchase price. Now, I personally, nor probably could you, no offense, but just average person can't go to a bank and get a $10 million loan on a $15 million property without having experience, right? Without having a track record and possibly a certain amount of net worth and maybe even having to guarantee part or all the loan. Well, I get to leverage someone else's credit and experience in that particular asset class, be it apartments, for example, where I am benefiting from that leverage, which is typically positive leverage and important to get, which I think you probably discussed on some of your podcasts too, in a way that I couldn't do it myself, right? Because I can't get that leverage myself on that big of a building. And I get the tenant diversification because of the size, which is great. And I actually get to diversify my own investments because I could put 25 or 50 or whatever, 100 or 100,000 or more into an opportunity where I have to put down $5 million to buy that building, right? So I get to all these benefits associated with buying the building, only a fraction of the amount to invest in it. And I get someone who's really experienced, who knows that asset much better than I ever will, because they've been focused on that for years, running the opportunity. So there's a lot of benefits associated with this. I can kind of go on. I'm trying to keep it short, but there's a lot of benefits.
You're listening to Jeremy Roll on the Cashflow Ninja podcast. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor.
This is MC Laubscher, the host of the Cashflow Ninja podcast. As you may know, I'm also the president and chief wealth strategist of Valhalla Wealth Financial. We help individuals, families, small businesses, entrepreneurs, and professionals build their wealth outside of Wall Street and help investors maximize the use of every dollar in their personal economy and boost their investment gains. We do this by combining the capital and investments with the financial vehicle of the wealthy according to the infinite banking concept. If you're interested to learn more about privatized banking and the infinite banking concept, you can access an exclusive webinar at cashflowninja.com/be the bank.
You're listening to Jeremy Roll on the Cashflow Ninja podcast, and now back to our interview.
No, absolutely. And now you had mentioned that you're a very low risk kind of guy when you look at investments, and great investors always look at how to manage risk in any investment and their position. How do you mitigate some of the risk in these passive cash flow opportunities?
Yeah, great question. I just want to hit on the risk for a second because it's important. Like, nothing is without risk. I mean, you can literally, you know, cross the street and get hit by a bus, God forbid. So nothing is without risk. So there's always what I call these 1% risks in these opportunities, which you can never get rid of no matter what strategies you take. And I'll outline a couple of them. And then there's other risks associated with the actual investment itself. Or the asset itself. So for example, if I'm going to send money to somebody who's an expert in a certain asset class, they can always be fraudulent. They can mismanage the money. There can be other challenges that they're directly involved with, which you can't necessarily avoid. That's what I call a 1% risk. It's there. It's low risk, but it's not zero risk, and it can very well happen. The way that I mitigate that risk is a couple different ways. One is I always do background checks on the managers. That's like a must for me, which a lot of investors unfortunately don't, but I think it's critical, and it's definitely saved me a number of times. I always meet with the operator in person before I choose to invest with them, just to kind of get a gut feel in terms of meeting them in person. And I always ask a lot of questions and try to read between the lines, because ultimately I'm trying to find someone who's conservative, has underwritten very conservative assumptions for the purpose of building longer term, overperforming and building longer term relationships with investors versus someone who's aggressive, made the numbers look really good, is just trying to find investors for this deal, get it done, make some profits off of it and move on. They don't care as much. So I have to read between the lines and get a gut feel for who am I making a bet on. That's very, very important in these opportunities, and that's always a risk. There are other risks too. For example, if you're going to invest in Florida, there's a hurricane risk. You know, so if you're going to invest in other areas, there's earthquake risks. So there's weather risks, and there's risks that things can happen adjacent to the properties, or the economy can go kind of south in a specific area. And so the way you mitigate some of these, you can make some decisions as to whether you want to invest in hurricane-prone areas or not, whether there's certain insurance associated with them or not. Those are all things you can link into. I think the most important thing to take away, though, is that I always diversify across three things. One is asset classes, two is geographies, and three is operators. Right? Because all of these have their own risks. And that's why I'm in over 70 opportunities right now. It takes a while to get that diversified. I've been at this 15 years. But if something goes wrong at one property right now, it's I'm not going to be happy about it, but it's not going to cause a huge problem for me. And that's really the way I mitigate the majority of the risk to begin with. So I there are other things to discuss about risk. I just want to keep it within time of what we need here, but I hope that helps somewhat.
No, absolutely. What are some of your favorite passive cash flow opportunities that you see out there? And what are some of the returns in these favorite opportunities?
Yeah, I would say that, right now it's 2017. We're kind of late in the cycle. Everything's cyclical. The economy is cyclical. All these assets like commercial real estate, residential, they're cyclical. And so I've been investing for a while in anticipation of a downturn. So some of the stuff that I like best in anticipation of a downturn, especially on the commercial real estate side, is mobile home parks, which may sound a little odd to some people, but they're fantastic for cash flow. There's very low turnover on them. And in the right areas, there's continued economic growth and a lot of demand. And by the way, most of your listeners probably realize that a lot of people's wages have gone sideways or have gone down for the past decade or more. Mobile home parks are becoming more demand. Supply of those is actually going down. Demand's going up. And if we have a downturn, demand will even go higher. So that's one great asset class. Another one is self-storage facilities. Typically, historically, during downturns, they tend to perform well. Obviously, it's going to be depend on a specific location and a specific operator and how well they run it. But those could do really well in a downturn. So I'm looking at those as well. And apartments are great. The challenge with apartments is that they're very highly valued. I mean, frankly, all the asset classes are very highly valued. But the right apartment building at a very unique price, rents tend to be sticky, which means that they tend to go down not that much during a downturn. They definitely tend to go down. But here in LA, for example, rents on average decreased. I think it was 10% during the previous downturn.
Yeah.
Reduce your cash flow, but it won't kill your entire situation. So apartments can be great too. Again, the problem is I stay away from those mostly right now just because of the fact that they're so overvalued. So no matter what you're looking at right now, it's not just a question of investing in the right asset class at this point in cycle. You have to invest in the right asset class with the right valuation. And you have to get a unique price. A market rate price is not going to do it for me right now because we have the potential and the likelihood that we're going to have a downturn. Asset prices are going to go down. So you got to be very, very careful. There's other asset classes too, but those are the main ones I've been focused on just because they're, and also like another one is senior living, right? So with the baby boomers retiring, et cetera, despite the downturn, most of them are going to continue to actually demand more and more assisted living, independent living facilities into the future. So that's another great one for the next 10 years even.
Now, you have a very strong opinion of an aspect to consider when you're evaluating passive cash flow opportunities. Can you share that with our viewers?
Yeah, I would say that a lot of people think about when you're going to invest in a startup. A friend of yours comes to you and says, a friend of mine's got this great idea. They're launching this great product. Or even if you're watching a show like Shark Tank or other shows, and you get kind of enamored with the idea. And I used to do this myself when I was first starting at my investing. And you're like, okay, I got to invest in a fantastic idea. What's the problem? The problem is that what matters more than the idea, who's actually running the show and who's managing the idea and the opportunity and the business. It's the same thing with real estate. I like to tell people, I live in LA, the best building on Rodeo Drive in Beverly Hills on the prime street in the prime location, you can make that investment. But if the person runs it to the ground, you're going to eventually get foreclosed. The keys are going to go back to the bank. You'll have nothing. So it didn't matter that it was in the best location. It all was about who was running it. So location definitely is important in real estate in general. But my point here is that the number one focus really should be on who you're making a bet on, who's running it, who's the operator, the manager. The number two focus should be on the actual asset. Same thing when you're investing in a business or a startup. Who is running it? What's their track record? And then what is the idea? Because inevitably, everyone has a great business plan, but those plans tend to change. They have to pivot. They have to kind of go with the flow depending on what's going on in the markets, et cetera. And it's who you're making a bet on that counts at that time. So that is by far the number one thing that I focus on. And then number two would be the actual asset itself. And a lot of investors, I think, I wouldn't say too much attention to the asset. You should really pay a lot of attention, but kind of fall short in paying attention to the operator, which is really key.
So true. As the great Mike Tyson once said, everybody's got a plan until they get punched in the face. And then Basically then it's the character of the person, because there will be challenges. And if someone has a great track record, obviously there's a character for that to have happened throughout. Now, Jeremy, for viewers out there listening to this and saying, I'd love to get started with this. How long is it going to take me to eventually get to achieve financial freedom? I have a number in my mind. Is there a return profile that they can base to? And what are some of the expectations that they should have pursuing passive cash flow investing?
Yeah, great question. So first thing I would say is that right now it's kind of difficult to find this, but if you're going to kind of focus on more low risk passive cash flow, the 10% rule is the one that I tend to just recommend using because it's simple. It's hard to find 10% cash flow right now, but it's still out there. So if you have a certain amount of, if you have a goal in mind, say you want to end up making $100,000 a year in passive cash flow to be able to live off of, okay, then obviously at that 10% rule, you'd have to look at $1 million type of investment over time.
Right.
I want to make it too complicated. There are some opportunities that have much higher levels of cash flow because they combine a repayment of the capital as well as a repayment of the actual principal at the same time. But in general, just to make it really simple, if you're going to look for low risk stuff that's long term, that 10% rule is a good rule to start with. Now, the problem or the challenge right now is that it's very hard to find opportunities that make sense if you're trying to find really unique pricing. So I would say to temper your expectations until we have an adjustment or a downturn. And usually in a downturn, it takes a year or two for asset prices on residential and commercial real estate to kind of bottom out. So even within a year or two after that downturn is when you really could start ramping that up. After that, you'll be able to start finding opportunities. And then, frankly, some of it is a function of how much effort someone's going to put into trying to find opportunities. A lot of networking is required. You can actually find some of them on crowdfunding websites now as well. So it's not as hard as it used to be if you're what's called an accredited investor. And so it all depends on how much money somebody has today, how quickly they want to deploy it. But I would say, let's be fair and say that once you have a better economic time in terms of cycle, you should assume it's going to take at least a few years. Anyone that I've ever seen successfully do it, but do it really carefully, be selective and invest in the right things, it's taken multiple years to get to the point where they had enough cash flow to leave the corporate world. Figure at least 5. This is a medium to long-term plan. This is not get rich quick or overnight situation. And I think if you're going to try and do that, you're taking a lot more risk than you should. So,
absolutely. A last question for you. Where would people find these opportunities? Where do you find a lot of these passive cash flow opportunities?
Yeah. Great question. So I have done a lot of networking over the past 15 years, built a big network. And as you mentioned in my introduction, I even started my own networking group for the purpose of finding these opportunities and, you know, learning from other people. So there's a bunch of things someone can do. First is if you're an accredited investor, yeah, but which, by the way, is just a definition of your net worth or your income. It's not like you have to join any society to become accredited. Then you can go on to a lot of these crowdfunding sites. And yeah, you can essentially find some right there and then, and you can evaluate those. And actually, they're a great learning tool regardless if you can actually log on and learn and read those opportunities. Another option is to actually go to some local networking events. Like in some of the bigger cities, even some of the smaller cities, if you go onto a website called meetup.com, you'll just type in real estate investing. You'll find a ton of meetings. In LA, there's literally one almost every night. To be able to go and network with people. And then you'll basically just look and try to find investors who have opportunities they can share, or try to find the managers or operators. Sometimes they go there to actually find opportunities there. Another option, I mean, if anybody wants help, they're welcome to contact me, depending on what city they're in or whatnot. But I might be able to help people to find opportunities as well, so they can contact me directly. But typically, because most of them are not allowed to be publicly marketed, it's a lot of networking. And in addition to potentially using the crowdfunding sites that exist now to be able to find some opportunities.
Fantastic. And I did an interview with Jeremy on the Cashflow Ninja podcast, where he shares how to grow your cash flow through your network and how to establish a powerful network. Jeremy, thank you so much. This has been fantastic. Can you please share a little bit just where my viewers can contact you and if they wanted to reach out to you?
Absolutely. They're welcome to email me. That's definitely the best way. So my email is jroll@rollinvestments.com. So it's JROLL at roll, which is ROLL investments with an S.com. And if anyone's looking for opportunities, just wants to learn this more, I'm on many calls each year helping people. I'm very happy to help people if they just want to learn how this works or whatever. I'm happy to spend the time via phone, but definitely email me and we'll sort that out.
Perfect. Thank you again.
No problem. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thank you for joining my guest, Jeremy Roll, and myself on the Cashflow Ninja today. If you like what you hear and appreciate what we're trying to build here at the Cashflow Ninja, please subscribe, rate, and review our show on iTunes, and share our show with family, friends, and your network. I'm always trying to learn and improve in every area of my life, so if there's any way that I can provide more value for you and serve you better, please reach out to me at info@cashflowninja.com. If you're not a subscriber to the Cashflow Ninja Gush Good newsletter, you can sign up for our newsletter at cashflowninja.com or text CashflowNinja to 44222. 222. The wealthiest investors on the planet know how to capture their wealth and leverage it to perpetually grow it. If you're interested in learning the premier strategies of the wealthiest individuals and families on the planet, you can access an educational webinar at cashflowninja.com/be the bank. That's our show for today, everyone. Until next time, live a life of passion and purpose on your terms. This presentation is for educational and informational purposes only. The information being presented and considered does not consider your particular financial objectives or situation, and it does not make personalized recommendations. This material is not intended to replace the advice of a qualified tax and legal advisor or other qualified professionals, and you should not use the information in place of a customized consultation with a licensed professional regarding your specific personal financial objectives, situation and needs. We believe the information provided is reliable, but we do not guarantee its accuracy, timeliness, or completeness.